It's like
Google body. All right, so I think we should probably introduce ourselves. Adam, do you want to start?
Yeah, my name's Adam. Was around for the previous podcast. This is our round two, our reboot, basically, where we talked about fun stuff, electronics, and media, entertainment. And we're here again, picking up the pieces where we left off.
Yeah, pretty much. We had an old podcast, Adam and I, and a couple other people that are not on this podcast called Cross Section. I'm Ryan. And then this is my other friend, Ryan. Ryan?
Yes, I am the other Ryan, the new guy to this group of dudes, I guess we could be called. It feels good to be a part of the group and discuss some of this fun topics, you know, games, tech, all things, diversion of life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the name of the show. It's a diversion.
Diversion. We're no longer cross-section. We're diversion.
Yeah. So, So, I think you all said it. We're going to talk about technology, games, media, entertainment, science, things like that. Pretty much fun stuff and stuff to get your mind off of your day-to-day. So I guess with that out of the way, let's get started. Ryan, you got something?
Yeah, so I wanted to chat about this new Intel news that came through this week. Part of, I don't know if it was announced at CES. I didn't see that particular set of announcement, but I was reading, and the current CEO of Intel is actually stepping down, which if you have seen a lot of the news around like chip makers, obviously Apple introduced their M1 chips and kind of left the Intel world, as it were. Obviously, they're not fully away from Intel because they do still have some of the older products that seems like they're still supporting. And I thought it was interesting that the new CEO is actually a I think 30 years he's actually been previously a part of Intel, and was one of the original engineers for the 486 chip, which is pretty cool to see someone more engineering minded. If you look at some of the issues that a lot of people had with the former CEO, he was more business minded, and you saw a lot of the problems with manufacturing around the 7-nanometer chips, and they just announced last year that they're pushing those back again. So it's like they're already for the 7-nanometer chips going to be a year behind schedule, when like Samsung and Apple are already making 5-nanometer chips. So quite interesting to see what it might look like for someone who's more engineering minded, who might want to push and compete a lot more with Apple and some of the other chip manufacturers.
So the new CEO is an engineer stepping up.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, he was formerly an engineer. I'd have to look up his exact bio of when he stopped, day-to-day engineering, but he's had other, C-suite roles and that kind of thing in the past with various companies. But yeah, was it Intel for like 30 something years before moving on to something else? But actually, designing a chip and being on that team is pretty cool, I think.
So they pulled him back to the company? He was somewhere else?
Yeah, VMware was where he was at most recently.
That's a pretty big jump, too.
Yeah, for real, right? I don't know. I think for me, I can go either way, right, when it comes to computing. I love my Apple products. I've kind of gone all in on the ecosystem. So I'm not really yay, go Intel, but I'm also not, I guess I'm just not super biased about it, personally, but I think we'll see what happens with Intel.
I've always been on the front of the Intel NVIDIA front. I like that combo stack. That's always been a go-to for me. Not that I dislike the Apple front or AMD, any of those. I think it's great that there's three computational spaces on them, but I've always enjoyed the Intel front.
Yeah, I think that any kind of competition is always good. And Apple just came out with the A1 or the M1 chips a few months ago, and they're pretty much the fastest laptop chips out there right now. And, you know, that's all well and good, but that's not going to carry over to PCs, Windows, or, you know, gaming computers or anything like that. So I'm glad to see that Intel's actually trying to make changes.
Well, the question on that, with that M1 you just brought up, yeah. Are they doing a mobile version of that for their smaller devices?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what the M1 is. Is like, it's their base level Mac chip. Okay. So currently it is in the MacBook Air. It is in the low end 13 or yeah, MacBook Pro 13 inch. And it is in a Mac Mini. Now, interestingly, the MacBook Air, that's the only chip you can get in it now. You can only get the M1 chip. But with the 13-inch MacBook Pro and the Mac Mini, they offer Intel versions of those machines still. And the reason being is that there's certain edge cases that the M1 chip isn't going to cover. Like right now, the M1 chip is limited to 2 Thunderbolt 4, I think Thunderbolt, I'm not sure if it's 3 or 4, but Thunderbolt ports, because it only has one controller on it. So I think what we're going to see is probably around, I think the rumors are around March, you're going to start to see whatever their next chip is. Or a variation of the M1 chip for those mid-tier, faster machines, more pro-level machines.
That's what I'm more thinking of, like, okay, so here we have the M1. How does that, do they look to make a less power consumption version to put into, like, the pads, the phones?
No. The way that Apple works is they make particular chips for whatever the device is. So the new M1 chips, they started learning how to make silicon on the iPhone, right? That's where they first started. It was the A4, I believe. The A4 chip was the first, like, Apple in-house chip. And then each year they make it faster and faster and faster. Then they made one for the iPad, right? And they keep putting the A-series chips in the phone, and in the iPads, they make a specific chip for the watch that is a pared down version of those. And so the M1s are actually souped up versions of those tablet and phone chips. They're not architecturally, they're not exactly the same, but you can kind of think of them in that way. They have more features than the tablet and the iPhone chips. So, they started at the bottom and are working their way up, instead of like Intel and AMD, where they had desktop CPUs and then they had to pivot those into laptops and then try to compete on the mobile space, where they just can't, because their architecture started with the desktop. So that's Apple's advantage, right there.
I think it'll be exciting to see Intel get an engineer at the forefront, because we all know in IT environments and such, when you get that person of a lead who has that past experience in it, it really does drive different passions, not just the marketing money front.
Right.
So it'll be interesting, because the M1 card is, or chip, is a difference, and it is a big change for the actual environment. So we'll have to, I'm excited to see, because you know Intel's going to want to beat that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's why I think for me, like, yeah, I'm not going to go out and drop a bunch of coin yet on a PC, because, you know, I have the whole Apple ecosystem. But looking forward and seeing, like, what they're going to do as far as Intel goes, like, that could happen, right? Like, I could be more inclined to say, okay, like they're innovating again. And which we've seen before, right? Like we've seen Intel kind of dip, AMD kind of took over at one point again. And it's like they've kind of had these battles over the last, you know, 15, 20 years where they're both back and forth. And, you know, one of them will have issues with manufacturing and the other will take over, you know, that spot. And kind of AMD and Intel have fought that battle. And then with Apple going with the ARM, you know, architecture and that kind of being, like Ryan was saying, like starting in mobile, like it's just, you know, a different starting point, but still, like, you know, pushing innovation once they get to that, you know, higher level. Because the reality is, like, these laptops are beating Intel chips, right? Like, they are definitely in a lot of the benchmarks, and the power consumption and heat, like, they're just incredible. Like, they did such a good job. But yeah, I think hopefully this pushes Intel to make some changes that, because I think they said now their 7-nanometer chips are going to be like 2023. That's a lot of time for Apple to push people towards them, right? Like even get more of a professional chip out. And
yeah, I wanted to go back to the fab issues. I think, I mean, that's fundamentally, that's where Intel fell behind, is they couldn't make the smaller chips. Every year they said that they were going to come out with like the next step down.
Yeah, it started with the 10, right? Like the 10 nanometer they had issues with, and then the 7. And
yeah, so they're supposed, what are they at now? Like the last time I looked, they were at like 14.
I think they're at 10. I think they did push those out.
Did they get to 10?
They did.
I don't know. But yeah, so getting back to that though, has it been confirmed that so there was a Bloomberg report that said that Intel is entering talks with Samsung and TSMC, who makes Apple's chips for processor fabrication. So what's interesting is that are they going to shut down their fabs and just outsource it? I mean, people have been talking about them needing to do that for years because they haven't been able to manufacture the smaller sizes.
Yeah, that's my question too, right? Like, if you have the ability to outsource it while you retool, get things to where maybe they, you know, in-house start working on the 5-nanometer to get back, you know, where Apple is. And I think Samsung has a 5-nanometer process already too. Like, there's a few companies already at that point and they're, you know, starting to develop these processors that are, you know, a generation beyond where Intel is trying to get. And so it's like, you almost, to me, you would have to, right? Like, take that quick win of, let's pay this, you know, supplier to make these for us while we innovate in-house and retool. And I think, you know, thinking as an engineer, maybe that's the direction this new CEO is going to go.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the process of chip fabrication to know if their architecture is what has limited them to not being able to manufacture these smaller sizes.
Yeah. One of the issues I think was like the silicon itself, like how they layer it. That might've been like one of the older ones where they just couldn't get that process down to where it was, you know, efficient and they could produce them at scale kind of thing from what I was reading. So yeah, I think part of its process, part of its, you know, maybe supply could be too, like, it's an interesting, you know, part of it is getting supplies. And when you have Samsung and TSMC and Apple kind of, you know, cornering the market on a lot of stuff too, it's tough to even, you know, get suppliers.
Yeah, I think the last thing that I want to say about it is if it is architecture dependent, then let me take that back. Unless they can do what you said, where they pay the third party fab to help them, like, basically catch up, they're not going to. The only way for them to be able to catch up is when the fab process can't shrink anymore. And then I think at that point, you're going to start to see them in AMD, hopefully catch up to Qualcomm and Apple specifically. Just like you saw with Intel's architecture, where AMD caught up with them in terms of efficiency because of heat and different things like that, because of their process, it was kind of like a dead-end process.
All right. So, we ready to move on to the next topic?
Let's do it.
Yeah, you got a cool respirator to tell us about, Adam?
Yeah, so a little bit more tech talk. Something very interesting is formulating to come into the market. It's a little bit of a futuristic touch on what we would see for a mask. I had to laugh the first time I seen it because I actually thought it was a joke. And then I looked at it and I was like, hey, this is actually really cool looking. But here's Razer. Razer is entering the market with a new mask. This mask, of course, is equipped with the one and famous RGB lighting. It has speakers built into the sides, so when you talk, it does amplify your voice. Also, your mouth is visible through it, with a dim lighter to see whether or not you want it to be completely visible or somewhat, you know, dampened out. And it comes with a box for UV cleaning. So when you're done for the day, you pop it in the box and it does a UV cleanup on it. So it is a very interesting product. I don't think they're ready for the market because I think they're still going through all the approvals that are necessary for it. However, the question I have on this is whether or not it's too late for them to do this, considering the pandemic may or may not be on its way to somewhat of a closure. Is it too late to enter this space? Is people already giving up on this forefront?
No.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at least in the U.S., we're going to be kind of stuck with the coronavirus for at least another year.
Yeah. I guess it depends on how long they get approvals for all this stuff, right? And then able to put it on the market.
Right.
Yeah. I think you look at it as more of like future stuff. Sure, it might in the short term be, you know, not really ready if it takes them a year to get approvals and actually be able to produce it at scale. Maybe the future issues like pandemics and, you know, rough flu seasons, I could see that, you know, I could see that. But my thing with this, and it's fine, I'll be a little devil's advocate on this. A lot of companies, like especially tech companies, they do things and you're like, why? And this
it's like out of the blue.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? Like, I totally get them pivoting, because in that, when their little intro video, they showed how they, you know, pivoted to making masks and stuff and had given them away. And I think that's cool. Like, if you have a manufacturing plant and that you can quickly retool and get new stuff out for, you know, health workers and pandemic stuff, awesome, do it. But do you really need to create this like rave futuristic N95? It's like, yeah, guys, I'm safe with my Razer face mask. This is awesome. I don't know. To me, I was just like, okay.
It's definitely a scale up because like everyone else is walking around with like the fabrics and you're like, look at my mask. And you can hear me better. RGB too.
The RGB thing just kills me.
When I first saw this, I didn't even read the article. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But now that you told me about it, and I'm looking at this Verge article, there's some really cool and important things on here for maybe a particular segment of the market. So the fact that it's N95, it's, you know, as far as I know, that's the best you can get. I don't know, maybe you can get N99, but like,
that's considered,
yeah,
medical,
so it's an
N95 surgery. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's N95 mask. The speakers, I thought at first, well, that's dumb. But
that's awesome.
Here's the thing. My girlfriend is a speech therapist, and wearing a mask is terrible because her patients have to see her mouth. So they make like these weird transparent masks that you can wear, but for the most part, she uses a regular one. And this solves that problem. And it solves the other problem where when you wear a mask, it makes it harder to hear you. So for her patients, they could see her mouth and they can actually hear her. So I think this is like perfect for speech therapists.
It does have some very good features here, and it does look good. I will, like, looking at it does look good.
The LEDs? No, get rid of them. You don't need
that. Oh, come on, man.
Get it out. You don't need that. You don't need that.
Look at what you could do to your mouth. You could, like, row, row, row.
What do the LEDs do? I just see rings on the, like, ventilators.
To me, that makes it a novelty. Like,
oh, okay. I see the other one. It puts, like, LEDs on your face.
Yeah, it looks like it's there over your mouth and stuff like that. Like, it is pretty neat. It's a fun little thing to mess around with. But, I mean, the thing that's going to kill it is going to be the price tag. That, I mean, I love Razer, but...
Oh, it's $600 or something, right? For this stupid thing?
Yeah.
Did they didn't announce a price, right? Because it's a project.
No.
Correct. I didn't see any type of pricing with this. Like I said, it's still even being approved, so...
Yeah, I was reading it in the... no one's even heard how the audio thing works or anything like that. Which they're working with engineers to do that. So, so I'll give it this. Okay, I'll give it the redeeming factors of, yes, clear face mask, great. If you're talking to someone who's deaf, who needs to read your lips, the speakers, cool. But again, get rid of all the novelty junk and make this like, if you're going to enter this space, I think you make it legitimate. We're like,
but they're making it theirs.
Yeah. But come on.
This is Razer. Like, this is their touch. I know. Like, everything they do, RGB, right? So, I mean, like,
but, okay.
I get it.
If my surgeon was wearing this, I'd be like, get me a new surgeon. I can't take this guy serious.
I mean, yeah. Like, that would be a little. I was actually, whenever Ryan was talking about it, I was thinking of that too. Like, well, what if, like, a doctor walked up to me and was wearing that? Like, what the hell would I think of this?
Yeah.
A doctor is not going to buy this.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, you're true. Right.
They're going to use the paper ones. Right. Like, that's just, but still, you know, there's always going to be that one quirky doctor.
Well, I will say this too. When I was at Disney, you know, rest my soul on that one. But when we went to Disney, the speakers actually would have been really nice. You're trying to yell at your kids, tell them to stay with you, stuff like that. You know, you're already muffled. And the only thing I see is the negative, though, just looking at this mask, maybe they've got this figured out, but it looks like that would be hot, you know, hot summer's day. It's glaring down on you and you got all that plastic versus the thin fabrics.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's another issue that it just dawned on me. Like, this is N95, like, it's all sealed up or whatever. That glass, their plexiglass or whatever that is, that's going to fog.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to see anybody anyway.
Some hot breath.
Yeah, it needs a little windshield wiper. Won't they add that on there too? While they're at it?
Well, wait a second. It says active ventilation.
Yeah, so it does. So yeah, it's probably not going to fog. It's fun to joke about it. But yeah, it should, because it should cool you, bring in cool air and push out and filter the CO2 that you're breathing out.
They should have worked with Bath and Body Works to get like one of those little fresheners that go inside of one, so you can smell something other than your breath.
I like that. See, now that's a feature.
I mean, we've all experienced it now.
Yeah, I mean, if I eat something and then put my mask on, I'm like, oh, what's wrong with me? Like, why did I just do that?
Chew some gum. Exactly.
That's what we need. We need to come out with gum specifically for masks.
Yeah, it's called gum. No. You just, like, put it in your mouth and but then you put your mask
when you're
on.
Chewing it. So this is where I think breath mints are better. Because when you're chewing it, like, the mask is all, like, flopping around. I have problems with that. I have a big face, okay?
So do I. You need to get, hold on, I'm gonna put this in the show notes. You need to get the Tom Benn V4. That's the one I have, and it is awesome. Did I get the V4 or the V3? Either way, one of these. It is incredibly, no, I have the V3 because it's three layers. It's incredibly warm in the cold months, and it fits like way over my chin, but it actually all fits, and because I have a big face as well, and that thing is awesome. Chew gum in it. You do all kinds of stuff.
It does look like a feed bag, though.
No, that's the V6. That one.
You gotta, like, that's what you want.
Yeah, you just want a feed bag. Like, that's what we all need is the feed bag.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want like a thong on your face.
Hey, I don't know.
You want a feed bag.
I mean, that's preferable, I guess. I don't know.
If I'm trying to be protective, I don't want a thong on my face.
True. You need more coverage.
Yeah, no, I mean, this looks cool too. Like this one you just showed us. But listen, look, I get it. I want my mask to look good too. I spent money on, you know, ones that look good and go with different outfits. But I don't know if I can spend money on this razor thing. I don't know.
I think that's the thing that's going to kill me with it. That's what I'm thinking about was like, we're going through the pandemic. We've all bought our fair share of masks. And then whenever we finally get to what we feel is some sort of normal and we say, hey, we're done with these masks now. Does this thing just go into a box?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know?
In America. In Asia, they've been wearing masks for years.
Yeah, we do have, you know.
They're considerate.
We still have like 30,000 deaths a year with the flu, and we could probably reduce that.
Yeah, so you feel like we really should be embracing masks for indefinite regardless.
I mean, am I going to wear my mask when I go out after the pandemic's over? Probably not. But in other cultures, they do. Right. I was thinking about this the other day, this exact same thing, because, I mean, it is the right thing to do. If you're sick and you have to go out, cover your face so you're not spreading your germs to other people, especially if you're in public transit or any other place where you're in close proximity with people.
Yeah, that's fair.
But we just don't do that. Yeah, we just don't do that. I saw a congressman on C-SPAN the other day sneeze. And when he sneezed, he pulled his mask down to sneeze and covered his hand.
Dude, was he with a group of people and everything. Just like.
They were in session.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, the woman next to him just like mean mugged him. So, yeah, I don't know who that was.
And
but.
Yeah, it's definitely a cultural thing, right? Like here in America, we've almost resisted it. Now, when I lived in New York City, like I saw a lot more people wearing them. And it was people who were, you know, born and raised here, and it was people who were immigrants, and it wasn't weird. It wasn't weird in that context. So my hope is that, yeah, we do get more towards, you know, when you're sick, more considerate. I think it's just better for everybody, right? Like I've had a couple of bouts with some bad flu in my day, and I do not like it. So. Like, if we could all get to that point, like, it'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. I think if the culture accepts it, then people will still be wearing masks. I really don't see a whole lot of people in the U.S. doing it, because everybody fights it right now, as it is. Not everybody. Some people. But it's a fashion accessory. Like Ryan said, like, he's got his, you know, matching his clothes and stuff.
I do.
I have my black Tom Ben V3 that I wear with all my black clothes, and yeah, it keeps my face warm when it's cold, so that's nice.
I mean, I'll put it this way: if the world or if America is still running down the path of like, hey, you don't look like a goofball whenever you're wearing masks, then I probably actually would spend money on the razor one, because that one looks really cool. And that would be the accessory that I would be running with.
There you go.
Everybody's wearing normal masks, and Adam shows up with his like LED neon mask. Like,
I'm ready to party, guys.
He looks so weird.
I'm just saying, that's got me written all over it. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, that would be if we started all this and it was on the market, then it'd be like, I'm just gonna go ahead and buy that one. That's gonna look good.
How much would you pay for it?
Probably about $350.
Oh,
yeah. I was thinking that maybe like a good price for that would be like $245.
Yeah, somewhere like I definitely do not see this over $500. If they did something crazy like that, I would be like, you guys, no. But I could see maybe $250-$350 range, somewhere in that.
The UV cleaner, I wonder how much that is, like to make. Yeah. But there's other products with those that aren't really expensive.
Right? Yeah, because like the UV light. Itself, you can get those, right? It's just, first of all, how strong how effective and that kind of thing is it?
Well, I seen like on Amazon there was like a phone box of UV cleaner that you just like pop your phone in it and it just does the thing overnight and charges. So I mean, I think that's kind of for it. I mean, I feel like that was like a $40 or $60 product. I didn't read too much on it. I just seen what it was. I was like, oh, it's a cool idea.
It's just a tanning bed for your phone,
basically.
Comes out smelling like chicken.
All right, so that's our fun talk with masks. I think the other thing that I was going to bring up was a video game. You guys like Mario?
Who doesn't?
Everybody likes Mario.
You like Mario? Yeah, so most people already know about Mario 3D World coming to the Switch, the Wii U game being reported as its deluxe version. The cool thing about it, out of what we've seen from this week from Nintendo, they had another exclusive trailer for it, was the Bowser's Fury. And I almost said furry.
Oh, you just made me type furry.
Yeah. I done ruined it. Anyway, yeah. So the thing is, what I've seen on that, at first glance when it came out, I was like, okay, it's going to be like a little expansion thing, 3D World, blah, blah, blah. But it's actually pretty neat. They got some different mechanics to it. You can actually play co-op with someone as Bowser Jr. And it seems like his motivation is actually to help out calm his dad down because he's gone completely nuts. And they're really utilizing the Giga Bowser look, which is one of my favorite looks from Bowser. You know, he's huge. He's got massive spikes. He's super angry looking. Like, it looks pretty awesome. But on the flip of it, though, it looked like they added a Giga Cat, or Mario turns into a giant-sized cat.
And this is why you said furry.
Yeah.
It's a real catastrophe. Oh. In this free-roaming adventure, you'll travel to various islands in Lake Lapcat to collect cat shines to reignite lighthouses and clear darkened terrain. Watch out for Bowser, though.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched that trailer, I was like, this looks really cool. And then that last bit was him turning into a giant-sized cat, and I was like,
Oh, he's like a lion.
Yeah, and that's what you have to turn into to beat him. And I was like, okay, cool. He had me into, I don't know.
Luckily, Mario can match his might with the Giga Bell, which lets him transform into the mighty Giga Cat Mario and go toe-to-toe with the monstrous Bowser in a titanic battle of biggies.
Have you watched the trailer, Ryan?
No, I haven't. I'm on the site, and I'm just kind of scrolling through here.
I mean, I'll give my first impressions of it were, because I hadn't played the original on Wii U or whatever, so I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I would get this, you know, for my Switch. This looks like a fun Mario game. And then they got to Bowser's Fury, and I was like, okay, cool. What? Like, all right, the cat thing's different. But, yeah, it looks fun. Like, it's definitely, like, a little bit different. I do like that version of Bowser. That's cool. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it looks cool, even though I haven't watched the trailer. But just, you know, it's Mario.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be good. I feel like I played a little bit of the 3D Worlds. Adam, did you play
it? Yeah, and you played it over at my place, I think, once.
Well, I had a Wii U.
Yes,
so,
but I think we played four-player.
Did we?
I think so. Or maybe it was the Wii U one, the Super Mario Wii U.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But what I'm getting at is you could be a cat. You're a cat in that game,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, so, I mean, this isn't anything specific to Bowser's Fury, except that you can become a Giga Cat.
A huge one.
Which is looks like a lion,
yeah,
I guess.
I think, for me, that was... The only weird part was, like, that whole thing is centered around cats. Like Lap Cat. It's a giant Giga Cat. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a cultural thing, and I just don't get it. And, like I said, I haven't played the 3D Worlds. But that did look cool, becoming the standard version, you know, cat where you can climb things. That did look cool.
You can play the multiplayer online, too.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yes, that looks awesome.
Yes. I'm definitely going to get this game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One really cool thing about it, I saw, like, the cherries, they turn you into multiple versions. That was really cool looking.
Yeah.
What's that? I don't know anything.
So it's
about
like
it.
You get the power up that basically replicates yourself so that you can do multiple things in that level. And because of the way that the maps are, like the view, right, like they can be, because there's so much depth to that level, maybe there's like stuff to do at the top level while you're at the bottom, and you know, all your Marios at the same time can do it.
So how do you control that? Is it like you do an action and then duplicate yourself, and that action keeps repeating while you do the other action?
No, it's simultaneous control. So like you push up, all the models do the same thing. And these are the mechanics that are in the original game that was on the Wii U.
Okay. I thought they maybe ripped off.
No, the new mechanic is just simply, it looks like the co-op with Bowser Jr. and what happens in that nature, and then the fact that you can turn into the Giga Cat, the huge one. Those are the new features with the Bowser's Fury, from what I've seen. But in all case, I am excited about it. I don't know. I thought it was goofy seeing a giant-sized version of Mario Kart. But outside of that, I thought everything else looked really cool.
I've enjoyed all the new Mario stuff that they've, you know, since the 35th anniversary stuff. I've enjoyed everything that they've announced. So, yeah, I'll definitely get it. It's a cool game.
And I hate to dip in rumors, but there's a lot of talk because 35th year of Zelda is this year. And, man, am I crossing fingers for a trilogy pack like how they did for Mario.
Oh, that would be awesome. Like Link's Awakening and...
Well, we have Awakening already on the Switch, but...
Yeah, but that's like the new version.
Yeah, but like I would like to see, of course... You know, Ocarina of Time. I do want to see Wind Waker, and I would like to see Twilight Princess. I'd like to see those three in the pack, to tell you the truth. But the only thing is I would want to see the 3DS version of Wind Waker or Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get that. What you'll get is the N64 version, because they've already shown that they did that. They were able to do that with the Mario games.
Yeah, plus they've already got the built-in emulation for 64, so I mean... Mm-hmm. It makes sense, but like I said, I know it's an off tangent, but I am crossing my fingers for something cool like that this year.
I want 64 to be added to the
Me too.
NES and SNES. It's called online, but it's not online.
Yeah, it's like because you have to have the subscription to use them, but yeah,
that would be cool.
I was thinking about that when they announced the three-pack of Mario. I was like, well, why aren't they just going for it? I mean, obviously, me being all simplistic about it, I know, I get it. Like, it takes time to port those over and get them working. But, I mean...
Then they can just sell them.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm wondering is, are they going to just add, like, an N64 emulation, or are they going to sell versions of the game like that, like where they'll re-release, you know, GoldenEye or something, you know, where it's... Now wouldn't that be awesome?
But they have to modernize the controls.
Yes.
Because I've gone back and played GoldenEye, and I don't know how I ever played that game.
Yeah,
it is really weird.
Yeah, I booted up my N64 not so long ago, and I was like, what? How did I even play these games?
I think that's what's so weird about that, though, because, you know, moving around with the C buttons and then trying to aim, and, like, we were good at it.
Yes.
Like, we were good. I mean, we played it all the time.
Somehow.
Yeah, but there's no way in hell now. If I try to do it, I'm like, what? I don't even know I'm shooting. The auto-aim is my savior.
Yeah, it was so new, right, and innovative. And now you're like, what the hell were we thinking back then?
And I loved that controller. I know everybody was like, oh, it's the worst controller ever, but I always really liked that controller.
It was really ergonomic.
Yeah, I thought it felt fine.
I mean, it like fit good in your hands.
But yeah. I will go ahead and stand by that the 64 is actually my favorite all-time console.
Wow. That's a statement right there.
Yeah, well, the reason why was just because it was that first one that really got everyone sitting on the couch together and playing four players and enjoying it.
True.
Because you could get that multiplayer tap for the PlayStation stuff, but there was few games versus like almost every game that was multiplayer for the Nintendo was, hey, four players, sit down, everybody party.
I lost the palm of my hand to Mario Party on 64.
All those sticks broken.
I'll never forget it. Okay, so I think our last topic that we've got today is Google bought Fitbit. Now, I didn't know that this was happening, but apparently it's been kind of a process that's been going on for a bit. There was an EU merger commission approval from like December, I think. So it completed today, and Fitbit came out with their announcement today, followed by Google announcing that the merger. And it seems like that they're going to be, I don't want to say independent, but kind of staying the same. But every company they says that when they get merged in, yeah. But Google did make some promises, and I think some of these were actually required for the merger to be approved in the EU. They're going to keep the Fitbit data separate from all of their other, like, Google Ads data. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I'd imagine they're going to be on different, like, databases and machines. The other interesting thing was that they won't use any of that data for ads. So I think when I first saw the Fitbit announcement, I thought, oh, great. You know, Google's going to get Fitbit, and then they're going to use all your data to, you know, sell ads. That's what they do. But it seems like as part of this, they're actually kind of required not to do that. So I'm not sure where Fitbit will fit in, because Google had already had the Android Wear, and that just really didn't take off. So my guess is that Fitbit will be kind of like Beats is for Apple, where they'll just be a separate brand. I don't think that Google is going to, like, put them into, like, you know, the Nest sub-brand, or the, what is it, Home now? What does Google call it? Is it Nest anymore?
I think they moved to Home.
Yeah.
I think some of their stuff is still Nest.
Yeah, I think some of it is, but I think, yeah, everything kind of moved to Home. But anyways, I don't think that they're going to move it into those consumer brands. I think that they'll probably keep Fitbit as its own brand, at least in the short term.
I mean, that's what we want to see, right? Like, just like the Oculus and Blizzard, all these other brands that get bought up and thrown into the fire eventually. You don't want it to lose its touch where it's at, but you know there's going to be some sort of level of taintedness.
Yeah, that it does make me think that, since you mentioned Facebook buying Oculus, it makes me think that eventually, if you want to use your Fitbit, you'll have to have a Google account. Like, you'll just log in with your Google account.
Right.
But they did say that, yeah, it says Google will continue to protect users' privacy. And that was part of the approval process that was required by the EU regulators. They'll also allow Fitbit users to choose to connect to third-party services, and they would continue to work across both iOS and Android. So, I never really thought that it would stop working on iOS, because Google's pretty easygoing when it comes to making hardware work wherever they can, because they just want everybody. They don't care what platform you're on.
Yeah, and that's something I would not, like, for instance, I don't have an Apple Watch. I do have a Fitbit. I have had the Moto 360 and stuff, so I did do the Android Wear at one point as well. And, you know, that's the biggest sell factor for me on the Fitbits, is the fact that you can sync it up with almost anything. It's pretty well versed on being connected, and obviously battery life. But I would hate to see a bottleneck happen at some later date of, like, okay, well, we're no longer going to support other platform because they're a competitor to us, even though you guys had that in the past.
I'm also interested, so looking through some of that data, like, binding, those are binding agreements, and that's good. Like, and it says 10 years for the agreements of not using their data for ads and that kind of thing. My
Oh, so that's the sunset.
Yeah, exactly. So there's definitely sunset date on it. Yeah, so, which the EU will probably try to reinstate them again, right? That's, you know, probably what will happen is, oh, you want to re-up this, you know, contract or whatever they, you know, license.
I don't know. I think once it's...
Oh, is that it?
I don't think so, because, like, once you... I mean, it's just an approval of the company being merged, right?
Yeah, I guess... Yeah, maybe that's how they view it is, well, we'll agree to a 10 years, and then we don't have to agree to anything else. And that's some of my fear, too, is, okay, well, when that 10 years is up, who's to say Google doesn't just, you know, flip the switch, and now all that historical data...
Ten years worth of data.
Here you go. But I also think they then own that data, and they could use it for their own internal tracking and everything all they want, right? Like Google owns that data. It's another
Google Health. Yeah,
exactly. It's another data set that Google's now going to own on us. And part of that will not be you cannot opt out on some of that, right? Like that's what they'll do is it'll be tied to your Google account because that's what they've done with other stuff. And then all of that data is going to be there. Now, yeah, you can't go in and delete your personal data, but you know, they make it jumping through hoops most of the time. And then, yeah, I it's hard to just trust people, right? Like trust companies with that data.
Well, I was going to say there's only one tech company that I trust with my like personal data and my health data, and that's Apple. They don't sell ads. They don't sell anything. They don't sell. They go out of their way to make privacy a feature, so much so that if they ever did violate privacy, it would destroy their reputation.
And I think that's part of me too. That's looking at this and going, okay, it's great for Fitbit as a company to innovate more because they have, you know, this new, you know, resource of engineers and hardware and money and all this stuff. That's great. And I think Fitbit has been, you know, one of the best in that market for sure. Like they've been one of the best and longest standing in the market. I mean, you remember Nike tried to get into it and they couldn't really
had
one
of those.
Yeah. My wife had one of those and it was fine. But then all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we're pulling the plug. Okay. You know, like, so
what was that? I don't remember.
I don't remember the name of it, yeah, but I remember having the band.
Yeah.
But Nike had their own.
Yeah. They had their own
fitness tracker.
Yeah, exactly. You know, his pedometer, it did some health stuff, that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, they had the pedometer that went in your shoe.
They had that one too. Yeah, so they had the wrist one that, you know, was tracked how far you ran and that kind of stuff, and you know, gave you a little score or whatever it was.
Yeah, now you can just get the Nike Apple Watch.
Yeah, and that's what happened, I think, was they just decided to pivot and basically license stuff to Apple instead.
Right. Yeah. And they still have like a fitness, like exercise regimen application, Nike Plus. I've used that and it's decent.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of what they like pivoted over to is more the software. And, so yeah, I don't know. It's another thing that Google's now going to own too, where I'm just like, you're already getting in trouble for antitrust. Is this really like a health? Like, do you want to get into the health space in a time where you're under a lot more U.S. government scrutiny? You know, it seems like an interesting choice. And I know that they had started this because I remember reading about this, you know, it might have been even in 2019 when I initially saw reports of this possibly being a thing. And was thinking, okay, like at that time, yep, just another brand that Google's going to buy and either crush or, you know, gut kind of thing. And now you put it in the context of Google being investigated and you know, legislation being brought against them that's, you know, antitrust. Is it really like the right time to be doing that kind of thing? It's a little odd.
I mean, I feel like whenever you put anything on a digital platform, whether it's your health, your tracking, your personal pictures, any recordings and such of that nature, you're already putting yourself at that risk. Like you have to somewhat assume that regardless of what you're signing far as a EULA, that you're still going to be vulnerable. Cause even outside of like the businesses themselves, you're still going to have other people that are going to want to hack and steal and do those types of things as well. But so, I mean, I guess like I don't have so much of trouble with it because I automatically assumed that the moment I put this watch on that I started tracking myself, that if my data was going to be somewhere, it was going to get compromised or touched somehow or another.
So that's an interesting point. But with Apple, your health data stays on your phone. If you back your phone up to iCloud, your health data doesn't go. It only stays on your phone. So somebody would have to steal your phone, you know, and whatever. But your health data, yeah, you don't have to worry in that regard.
And that's a good touch because realistically, let's face it, like, I'm not important enough for someone to target me specifically and go after my phone and hack my phone. I mean, and none of us really are. There's someone who's trying to get something's going to go after where they can get a mass majority of data.
Not yet. This podcast is going to be big.
You just wait. We'll all be targeted. Yeah, I mean, I can see that, right? There's always the acceptable risk that we all take in the time we're in, where everything's digital for the most part. I mean, our medical records are flowing that way, and they do the best they can. And there are hacks. Absolutely. Hospitals get malware all the time because we're humans and we make mistakes and those things happen. That's why I actually thought it was laughable, honestly, in this EU agreement that they're like, oh, the data is going to be in separate databases. It's like, yeah, but you do know that all it takes is one engineer who works on a couple projects that has access to that, that all of a sudden now I have access to both of these databases. It might make these government officials feel all warm and fuzzy, but in the tech world, you're going, yeah, so like they'll just find a list of those accounts on some, you know, engineer's laptop or something and be able to get access to. That stuff happens all the time. Like we've seen huge hacks recently where somebody made a mistake, right? Let's put this password here. Oh man, look at all these things I got access to. That's for another show. So yeah, I don't know. I think my big thing is how they're using my data. That's what it always is for me. Is I know you're going to have access to it as a company. A lot of it, and I have seen this with Google. Like we have the Google Home Minis and stuff throughout our house. A lot of that is all anonymized when they send it over. Even a lot of the, you know, voice commands that you ask is anonymized and then deleted quickly. They get their analysis from it to help improve things and then, you know, dump the data. So they have shown that they're willing to do the right thing. I'm just not sure, like, health data for me is like another, you know, step personal. So it's tough for me.
Yeah, I can understand that. It'll be interesting to see where it all goes though.
I think we can all agree that it's a lot better that Google bought Fitbit than Facebook.
Oh, 100%. Try these diet pills. That's what you would get, is ads. Like,
yeah.
You already get them, but then they would be really targeted.
All right.
All right. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.